You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Curtis Blades, Nocto Chris Dawkins, Curtis Blades, Curtis Blades. I don't know what to do with this music, but it just made me want to say Curtis Blades Curtis. Over and over again.
Is it the new Tommy Aspinall? Curtis Blades.
No,
not working. All right.
Nah,
trying to give him the rub.
Sorry. I mean, many have tried. we'll see if maybe this performance gets it done. But Curtis Blades said, you know what? I heard what y'all had to say about me. You said the only way I'm going to beat this man is if I just wrestle him to death. So I'm just going to go out there and knock him out. And that's exactly what he did. He knocks out Chris Dawkins in the second round, wasted very little time once the action resumed in round two, and a big win for Curtis Blades. And it caps off a pretty darn good UFC Columbus event. Thanks for joining us for the post-fight show. We are live. I am Mike Heck. We got E. Casey Lydon with us as well. This time last week, he was fighting, or he was like about to make the walk.
Yeah, actually, this time last week, I was sweating profusely backstage, nervous. I was just like, that's what I was doing that last week. This week, I'm chilling at home, getting fat, watching fights, and talking about fights with you, the wonderful fans of MMA and our stream right now. So thank you for being here.
The mixing of the martial arts. Yes. AK will be joining us momentarily. He's just doing some back-end MMA fighting work, recapping Curtis Blades' big win. So he'll join us to hop on in, jump into the discussion. But Casey, Curtis Blades goes out there and gets it done, shuts a lot of people up. Most people thought, including myself, that he was just going to just kind of be boring for three rounds and then finish him with brutal ground and pound. Curtis is like, I hear what you're all saying, and I'm just going to go out there and blast him at 17 seconds into the second round. So your thoughts on Curtis Blades' performance? And this is the big question. Does a Curtis Blades win do anything for him, considering the state of this heavyweight division right now, where it all stands? So the reaction to the knockout, and did that win do anything for him? Did it move him up at all?
My reaction to the knockout was, holy moly, that was awesome. That was a heavyweight knockout. It was technical. It wasn't sloppy. Curtis Blades looks like a legit, A-level heavyweight. And, it takes time. I mean, how old is Curtis Blades? In his young 30s, right? He's not even in his prime yet by heavyweight standards. So I think we have to kind of just reevaluate who we think is Curtis Blades. We just got to accept that he's getting better and he's becoming a much more complete mixed martial artist. And the whole, he's going to wrestle. I really think that worked. That really worked in his advantage because I'm sure in Dawkins' training camp, they're smart. They're like, oh, he's going to take down defense, take down defense, take down defense, get off our back. That's probably like 90% of their camp, and they go, oh, no, Chris has the hands, we'll just fine tune them. But I just don't think they were prepared. I don't think we were prepared as just as journalists, as viewers, as fans, that Curtis Blaydes was just going to be like, nah, let's do this. Let's throw hands. And he did it. And we thought Chris Daukaus was going to be just a faster, you know, better boxer. Not tonight. Curtis Blaydes. Answer your second part of the question. Does it do anything for him? I don't know what was possible. I don't know what he could have done that would have been better than this, honestly, unless it ended like in the first minute. And I think the first minute would have been bad, because I think if it ends in the first minute, we kind of go, oh, lucky shot. The fact that he got this in like the 10-15 seconds to the second round or something like that. The fact that we got we got a full 5 minutes of him quality striking. So it wasn't a lucky shot. We know it wasn't a lucky shot. This is just him clearly being a better striker in there. And we know he's the better wrestler. So the fact that he was a better striker and with Chris Daukaus, who we consider probably one of the better strikers at heavyweight. This is the best case scenario of no real best case scenario really out there. But he did everything he needed. He had the call out. Gone was kind of, we'll talk about the call out a little bit later. But it was a perfect night for Curtis Blaydes, as perfect as it could have been, I guess.
Well, we can talk about the call out now because it's significant. Because, I mean, Chris Daukaus, just tough night for him. And a lot of people are saying, I think the UFC just kind of brought him up too quickly. They gave him too big of a push. And, you know, listen, there's a little bit of truth. There might be a little bit of truth to that in hindsight. But the Derek Lewis fight, considering where Lewis was and where Daukaus was on that nice run. Like, the fight made all the sense in the world. It made perfect sense. Daukaus wins, you shoot him up. Maybe he gets a title fight, he gets right in that conversation, and if he loses, then Derek Lewis wins and everybody's happy about it. So, I mean, it was kind of like a win-win scenario. The bounce back with Curtis Blaydes tells me that the UFC just doesn't think he's going to be a title contender, because that's a horrible match. It was just a terrible matchup for him. We actually thought like he might have a chance against Derek Lewis, like maybe he can land a big shot, maybe he can extend him. But this fight, it just didn't seem like anybody thought he had a chance to win. It just seemed like really strange matchmaking. This is like, we really need a main event. What can we do? Oh yeah, we got Curtis Blaydes. Who's available? Okay, let's throw in Chris Daukaus. It just, I don't know.
Was this always on the card? Or was it a replacement for the main event?
Did it get bumped up? I don't think it was always in the card. Once they lost the other main events, they were trying to work on something else. They tried to pull the old rabbit out of the hat, trying to do Holloway versus Emmett. And then once that fell through, for sure, they put this one together. So they had some sort of main event.
I think UFC got lucky in the sense that it was a very big performance for Curtis Blaydes, because this main event could have kind of stunk up a really good card, and it didn't. So credit to Curtis Blaydes for exceeding all of our low expectations in terms of entertainment. So
So let's talk about the call out, because this is one of the things that you need. You need to leave the fans remembering the performance and then remembering what you did after the performance. So Curtis Blaydes, little passion, little vigor.
I felt it.
Calls out. I want that interim title fight. I want that interim title fight with you, Gon. And I'm like, Gon just lost to Francis and he's going to be out for most of the year. I mean, cool. And then DC's, you know, being that little kid on the playground, poking the bear, trying to, you see
trying
that
take,
guy?
Where's Stipe? Trying to take Helwani's job as the instigator, stirring the pot.
Yeah. DC's like the Terminator. He's like, boop, 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 boop. There he is. There's Stipe. Maybe you should fight that guy. And Curtis, I mean, good stuff from Curtis. I want to be just like you, so I think I'm going to have to fight you. Like, I like the line, but Stipe's like, yeah, cool. Takes a sip of beer, taking pictures with the fans. And then Curtis is still trying to like say things to get Stipe's attention. Stipe's just like, okay. And then walks away. Like, literally no sold everything. What did you think of the call-outs, the post-fight stuff? Not bad. It's just, I think DC actually screwed him.
Me too. I think DC put him in a bad situation. He wasn't playing, like, calling out Stipe in the hometown, the home state arena, I guess, it was just never going to go over well, honestly. Especially, Stipe is not that guy. He's not that guy. I think calling for the interim belt was a smart call. Being specific and wanting to fight Gon, I think it was kind of off. But that's just a little detail. I mean, he could have said, give me John Jones. Give me Stipe. Give me whoever. I don't know. It's like, hey, Francis, do your little thing, and I'm going to get that interim belt, and then we're going to rematch and, you know, whatever or something. But but definitely calling for the fact that we're talking about Curtis Blaydes fighting for interim belt is a good thing. It's an excellent thing for Blaydes. Because before the fight, we were just kind of saying, it's a holding pattern no matter what happens. But now we're honestly talking is like, oh, okay, well, Blaydes, I don't know who Blaydes will fight, but Blaydes should fight for the interim belt, you know? So I guess the more I think about it, you know, just kind of saying this out loud, I guess, no, great situation for Blaydes. I mean, yeah, it wasn't sensational call out, but he's not that guy. But the fact that there's a serious conversation about him fighting for the interim belt, I think is very good for Curtis Blaydes and his future prize fighting career. And we have another person who just called in. Who is this handsome fella?
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Silhouette.
Oh, there we go.
Hi. Oh, there he is. There he is.
Long time listener, first time caller. Okay. Mike, I love him. Big fan of your work. Casey, you're okay too. Mike, big fan.
Look at that. There he is. He's back.
Hey, guys. Guys, where's the poll? Where's the poll? No one did a poll.
Why we would first of all, I don't want to never take that.
I don't want to take everything you've worked for.
No, you guys can. I encourage everyone to utilize their polls as necessary. That is what I say all the time. I don't want to be the only one who's, you know, doing the polls around here. All right. I don't even know what to ask. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry to interrupt. What were you guys talking about before I hopped in here?
We're talking about mixed martial arts.
Yeah, the mixing in the martial arts. So, I mean, you have to play catch up here. So you get the 2-part question.
Jeez.
Thoughts on Blaydes' performance? Actually, it's more of a 3-part question. Blaydes' performance, did it do anything for him grading the call out afterwards?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it did a lot for him. We kind of said before, I think we were a little bit flippant about what this could do for Blaydes' chances. I think maybe because we were just predicting a kind of a five round grinded out decision, like dominant but not highlight reel worthy. Like, this was awesome. This was a highlight reel knockout. We talked a lot about how he's improved his striking, and like, obviously you don't want him to get away with what brought him to the dance, but against an opponent who, you know, he's so heavily favored against, I think it was smart of him, and also he's a good grappler. I think it was smart of Blaydes to kind of show that, yeah, look, I've been working with boxing. I'm working on my all around striking game. And he looked great. He looked really good in the first round. It wasn't the most exciting round, but it was a clear 10-9 for Blaydes without even the hint of a takedown. He said afterwards, of course, my wrestling and my opponent's awareness of my wrestling is what, you know, kind of helps my striking. Mm-hmm. It slows them down, I think was the phrase he used exactly. And I thought that was like a perfect description. It's very true. He's well aware. He's not, you know, Izzy Adesanya out there. But he knows that his striking right now is good enough, plus his wrestling, that he's legitimately a top five guy in the division, right? So, yeah, I thought the performance was great. And he proved us all wrong by again, scoring that knockout when a lot of us were thinking either late, like, you know, third, fourth round, ground and pound, or decision. This was an on-the-feet KO. Awesome highlight for him. And the call-out was so well done. The assist hat tip to DC, of course, for pointing him out to Stipe, that Stipe was in the building. Of course, this was in Ohio. And that was great, too, saying, I respect you, but I also have to beat you. And it was in character, but it was also, again, showed like a different side of him. It was aggressive, which we like to see. It was someone who said, I'm not just waiting. I'm not waiting. I'm not happy with my spot. I'm not happy with just being this guy who gets, you know, again, wins over, like, you know, guys like Chris Dawkins and guys who aren't top 7-8 guys. I want to be in that top 4 discussion with Ciryl Gane and Francis Ngannou and weirdly John Jones, I guess. So he did everything he could tonight, I think, to improve his position. How much did he improve it? That's another question. But I think indisputably he did improve his standing.
You know who we're not talking about? A heavyweight that won last weekend. I mean, so
that's the guy. That would have been the guy I would have called out if I was Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah,
that would have been. I would have called out Tommy Espinal. Tommy Espinal.
Curtis Blaydes. Yeah,
because that guy. There's so much momentum behind Espinal right now. Espinal, like all the Tai Tuivasa momentum. It's like Espinal took a little bit of that. He's the. You know, he's he's the guy. Like, he's the guy with the momentum. The ball's rolling downhill. It's snowballing. It's getting a little bit bigger. That's Tommy Aspinall right now. Would have been a brilliant move if he called out Tommy Aspinall. Tommy, don't you be going for these number one contenders or these interim title fights. Before you think about that, you got to go through me. You got to go through me. Shut up, DC. I'm not calling out Stipe. I'm calling out Tommy Aspinall. I would have A+. I told Casey, and he kind of agrees with me. True or false, Daniel Cormier kind of screwed Curtis Blaydes over tonight by doing the Stipe stuff. I think Curtis handled it well, but I think DC kind of hurt him.
I don't think so necessarily. I get the whole Tom Aspinall thing. Obviously, his name is white hot right now, but I think most people would agree in the rankings. He's behind Blaydes. He has a lot to gain from taking Blaydes' spot. Blaydes certainly would gain from, again, yeah, diffusing the sudden hot name at heavyweight, but Blaydes is ahead of him. I mean, Blaydes is more accomplished than Aspinall. I don't know. Aspinall should want that fight more than him. And if you're Blaydes, I think you know that. So if you're Blaydes, you're settling for nothing less than an interim title fight. Now, it's an interim title fight with Tom Aspinall. Fantastic. But you're not looking for anything less than that right now.
Yeah, so I think that's what I was trying to say. Just as long – Blaydes is like, I don't care who it is. Just as long as you weigh 206 pounds and up, you're fighting me for the belt. That's all that matters for Curtis Blaydes. I don't think he shouldn't care. I think he just doesn't care. Just as long as someone signs that contract, but whatever it is, I'm in that cage. I think that's all Blaydes has to do. And coming into this fight, that conversation wasn't really there, but after that performance, I think there's a serious talk, serious conversation now.
True. Okay. 1 to 10, AK. 1 to 10. Chances Curtis Blaydes gets an interim title fight, his next fight. That he is, when they book an interim title fight, Curtis Blaydes is in that fight.
I'll go a hard 7. I'll go a hard 7.
A 7. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is considering some of the names that are involved, that are in the mix, and how reliable they are. By the way, this is not like, oh, if everyone's healthy, how good healthy and not in jail, how good are Curtis Blaydes' chances? No. This is. I mean, look, this is reading the tea leaves of some of these heavyweights who, let's be honest, names you just mentioned are not the most active fighters for whatever reason. That includes Stipe, obviously. That includes John Jones. Gone. I mean, would it be the other likely option, of course. So yeah, I'm fine going 7. I'm sure someone would go higher.
Casey,
if this was a company that, in my opinion, paid its fighters fairly, then I would give it a good 4. But we've seen the UFC do BS interim title fights, and I think they're not going to pay Stipe what he wants, and they're not going to pay John Jones what he wants. So I think Blaydes versus whoever will make financial sense for the UFC. So actually, I'm going to go for that 4 to a solid 8.
Before this fight, it was at a 0.0001. It has jumped up quite a bit from there.
Yeah.
I give it a 1.2.
Woo!
1.2. I'm sorry, man. It's not fair. If this was Bellator, Curtis Blaydes would be fighting for the undisputed heavyweight title. If this is Bellator, if we did things in a meritocratic way by the rankings, Curtis Blaydes would be fighting for the Bellator heavyweight title in his next fight. Unfortunately, it is not Bellator. It is the UFC. And even though he had a great win, Blaydes is just so far down the list. It's not fair. Like, not the rankings, just the way. Like, who do we want in this fight? Who do we want as a business in this fight?
You know,
it's Stipe and Jones. Let's just say one of them doesn't happen. It's Tai Tuivasa. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts. It's Tai Tuivasa. He's the guy. They're going to put him in that fight. If it's not Tai, if another guy's out, they'll do Cyril Gane. If Cyril's gone, they'll do Tom Aspinall. Then if Tom Aspinall can't make it, then Curtis Blaydes gets his shot. Like, that's just the position he's in right now. And it's probably not fair, but that's how the UFC's kind of looking at this right now. Unless it is just like a big money thing and everyone just wants like zillions of dollars, and Blaydes is like, I'll do it for way less than that.
Yeah. We're kind of saying the same thing, honestly, because I'm basically saying Blaydes is going to get it because he's probably the cheapest fighter maybe to get that spot. And that's the reason I'm saying it too, because I know the UFC obviously wants to put butts in seats and sell pay-per-views, especially for their heavyweight title fights. I just don't think they want to pay those other gentlemen what they want. So that's why I think Blaydes will get the shot. But I agree. I understand what you're saying. Mr. Heck. Yeah.
I mean, Stipe and Jones are the big contracts. Obviously. Like those are the big ones. But even if, let's just say everybody else gets the same amount of money, the other names, Blades is still like fourth or fifth on that list. I
think so.
It's Ty Tuivasa and Tommy Aspinall. Those are,
I think he could be ahead of Ty and Tom Aspinall. I don't think it's so clear cut that they're both.
Ahead of Ty? No way.
He's ahead of both of them in the rankings. Oh, well, not Ty Tuivasa after the Derek Lewis knockout, but.
Right. Who are fans more likely going to be like, you know what? I have to spend $75 on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, but the UFC isn't always great. Let's be honest. The UFC isn't always great about listening to the fans here, right? It's 50-50. Sometimes the UFC is like, oh man, they did this amazing thing where they gave the fans what they want. And then half the time it's like, what the hell? Why did this person get this title shot? And I don't think Blaze would fall in the what the hell category. He certainly got a strong enough case and resume to actually be, again, the number one contender to an interim or heavyweight title. Again, there's a bit of, we have some recency bias going on here with Tom Aspinall. That was super exciting. He was a god in London. How is that going to play in other markets? I don't know. Obviously, if this title fight happened, you know, in Europe for some reason, yeah, Tom Aspinall all the way. There's no question. I mean, that's undisputed. He's number one. He rises above everybody. But I don't think it's so clear cut. Tuivasa is a little bit of a stronger case, like you said. One, we're kind of removed from that fight now, and I do think there's still a buzz there. And he knocked out, you know, MMA math. He knocked out Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis knocked out Curtis Blades. So in that sense, it isn't Tuivasa's fear, but I don't think it's so far ahead. I do think there's a cluster of those three guys, and I don't think like Blades is that far behind.
If Curtis Blades,
there's an odd no point on the line, by the way. Odd no points are on the line.
Big time.
If Curtis Blades is not in that title fight, AK hands an odd no point to somebody else. It's gone. You lose it. It's gone.
Wait, so you how many options? How many choices do you get?
I get all the others. No, I'm just kidding.
Then I got 2-1. 2-1. Though. I get 2 points then, if I'm right. Okay.
Yes. Stipe Jones or Ty. Yeah. Like that, it's Ty. Ty's the guy. If Ty Tuivasa is not in and Curtis Blades is in, then I'll give you 2 auto points.
I want 3 points. If you're getting the field versus
your confidence? Curtis Blades all by himself. I'm going with Ty Tuivasa. Just Ty.
You're saying just Ty. Oh, interesting.
I'm saying just Ty. I'm saying Ty gets it over Blades. Neither of them.
We have to give our points to Casey.
But tonight, was there anything that Curtis Blades could have done better tonight as far as like the fact that we're talking about this? Like if he wouldn't have won how we thought he was going to win, we're not talking about this at all. We're talking, okay, he's in the same spot. Aspinall, you know, he'll get the next shot or tie or whatever. Curtis Blades, it couldn't have gone better for him outside of the weird Stipe kind of call out, forced call out.
It was a good night for him.
It was a good night for him. I'm just saying it was so much better than I thought it could have gone. Yeah.
It was a great night for him. And he did a good job at the post-fight stuff. DC made it a little weird.
Yeah.
Stipe no-selling it sucked. I mean, if Stipe just... And we knew Stipe was going to no-sell. And DC knew Stipe was going to no-sell. And he freaking was in a rivalry with this guy for 3 years. Of course he knew Stipe was going to no-sell it. Like, he just kind of set Curtis up to fail. Like, if Stipe was like... did something, like invoked some sort of emotion. He literally turned his back on Curtis Blades to take pictures with fans, like while he was on camera. Like it just ruined it. It's just like he would have been much better spot if DC didn't do that. But doesn't matter. Neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Good win for Curtis Blades. We'll see what happens with Chris Daukaus. I know a lot of people are saying he should go down. He should go to the PI and go to 205. And I made this point on Twitter Spaces. This is cherry. Like, this is cherry on top of the sundae. Chris Daukaus, like, when he came into the UFC and fought Parker Porter, they brought both those guys in to make their UFC debuts, and they fought, and he knocked out Parker Porter. Did you think four fights later, he would be in back-to-back main events? Nobody thought that. This is great. Like, what a great run he has had. Tremendous run. Way better than anybody could have expected. So if he wants to fight heavyweights and not have to lose 40 pounds and cut all that weight. I mean, if he wants to do it, great. But if he doesn't, he can make a pretty darn good living just fighting heavyweights.
Oh, stay a heavyweight. Be
winning
a lot
of those fights.
Yeah. Be a fast heavyweight. Don't go to 205, Mr. Daukaus. Stay at heavyweight. Be a small heavyweight. Fast hands. Good on your feet. Good takedown defense. You'll do fine. You might not be a title contender, but you're going to make a damn good living.
I wouldn't completely rule it out, a move. I mean, this is two really devastating knockout losses. Two top five guys. Yeah. But if there's any chance that dropping down to 205 could somehow improve his durability, or at least increase his chances of not getting like smashed like this, maybe he's a much better fighter at 205. We don't know. He might be worse. We don't know. But I do think when you take two really, really vicious like knockout losses like this, you at least have to be thinking about making some sort of changes. If not, and division's one of the easiest ones to do, right? So I agree, he's overperformed at heavyweight, like Mike said. He's been on a nice run, four straight knockouts to start off his UFC heavyweight run, pretty fantastic. But now there's this reality check, and it's like, it's not that he's just losing. If you're just like losing decisions or competitive fights, you're like, okay, he's taking like serious damage. And again, it might be the same case like heavyweight, it might not, but I do think it's worth exploring if that might be it's just a healthier option for him.
I saw the performance bonuses.
I think the easiest option for Chris Daukaus is just to fight lesser competition.
I think
that's the easiest one to do.
But that's such a crapshoot with the UFC, right? I mean, now I don't know, right?
Yeah.
This is the Arlovsky fight. Like, this is, you fight, you put him against Andrei Arlovsky. That's the fight you make.
I like that fight.
Right? Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
We got performance bonuses. They awarded two. Who wants to guess?
Wait, just the performance so far?
Just the performance.
Just performance. Actually, I would go, I know it's not going to be that way, but I'd go Grasso and Blades, top two fights. And then fight of the night, obviously, Matt Brown and Bam Bam.
Yeah. Fight of the night's got to be a shoe-in. But I'll go Blades and Gutierrez.
Rudy Gutierrez.
And the winner.
Spinning knockout. Go for it.
AK Lee. AK I, Lee gets would, it done.
They hate submissions. So. The UFC hates submissions.
I mean, that was
Alexa
great.
Alexa Grasso should have got a freaking bonus tonight.
I didn't get it for cheap. Okay, sorry.
Well, the Gutierrez first finish in 7 years.
Wait a minute. That's fine. Her first finish in 7 years. Her first submission ever. But it wasn't like the prettiest submission. Let's be honest here. The Gutierrez knockout was.
It was a beautiful submission. What are you talking about? That was a beautiful.
Submission. How it started? They smashed into each other and fell into the fence.
Yeah, she switched. Dude, that was a high technical submission. That was awesome submission.
No,
that was
when it finally got to the ground, it was great. But the way it got there was really MMA. No,
they MMA'd it. How dare they mix the martial? Keep the martial arts apart. I agree. Keep the martial arts.
You remember how they got to the ground? they just like smashed into each other, and like it was very awkward. It was not like a smooth like transition. It's not like she was Damian Maya taking the back there. It was like they crashed on the ground first, and then Grasso's a better grappler and more athletic. She got the better. It was a good submission. The Gutierrez finish was like one of the knockouts of the year. Are you gonna tell me that Grasso's submission was one of the submissions of the year?
She didn't get touched in the fight. She went out just no bruises. I highly applaud very technical submissions, and that was a beautiful technical submission. The way she switched arms on it was great.
It was.
I would have given it to, no. Good. I would have.
Was Gutierrez like, not deserved?
Give Gutierrez some money.
Gutierrez should have gotten one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gutierrez should have gotten one.
I think Blades deserves it too.
Everybody deserves it, AK. Everybody in London got bonuses. Really, everyone. Why can't everyone in Columbus get bonuses? Yeah.
It's so silly. It's so silly not to just give everyone bonuses. I don't understand.
They gave 9 freaking bonuses last week. We got 1, 2, 3, 4. We had 4 finishes on this card. We couldn't have given 4 performance bonuses and a fight of the night? Come on.
I wish they gave 2 fight of the nights because Kara Franz and Askarov was a
great
stupendous fight too. That
should have
been 25 minutes.
Oh, so good.
It should have been 25 minutes.
Yeah, that would have been really an amazing main event.
Yes.
That would have been
great win for Alexa Grasso, by the way. Great tremendous win.
3 first submission ever. She'd never submitted anyone before. First submission ever.
I mean, it's wild. We'll see what happens with the I do want to talk just real quick on Joanne Wood because, I mean, we've talked about quote-unquote falls from graces in MMA and in the UFC. The story of Joanne Wood is an interesting one because this is a woman who had a title fight lined up with Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko gets injured. Wood could have waited like another 2 months and gotten her title fight. Instead, she said, no, I'm tired of waiting. I'm going to fight Jennifer Maia and then get submitted by Jennifer Maia. And it's just all been downhill since, man. Like, this is just a crazy, crazy story. It's one of those ones that's going to fly under the radar and may not be like at the top of everyone's list, AK, but I mean, this is Joanne's like still game. Like she's still out there, like doing the right things and wants to get in there and fight, man. But I mean, to go from a title fight to just taking a fight because you just didn't want to sit out any longer instead of waiting a couple extra months to fight for the belt. And now we're here. I mean, where does this one compare?
She was winning the fight on the feet. Casey, you're probably a little better at judging this stuff than I am. I thought she was winning the fight on the feet. It wasn't like a blowout, but I did think she. Jojo Wood.
You thought Jojo was beating up Grasso on the feet?
I don't think she was beating her up, but I think she was winning. I did think she was winning.
I don't really think it went long enough, honestly, to give a fair assessment.
I was scoring it on the feet for what is it that's happening? You're right. There wasn't a lot to score. It went to the ground a couple of times before the finish. But I do think that she looked good. And, you know, we all know her Muay Thai is fantastic. It always has been. But you know, she's getting older. The division's getting younger. Pulling that trigger just gets a little more difficult. But I thought technically she looked fine. I don't know how it would have gone on the feet if it had gone 3 rounds, but I think she was kind of winning that first round. And then again, it all just went to hell for her. She's in a very difficult situation. And again, we keep harping on it, but man, if they just paid fighters more, I feel like we'd be telling a very different Joanne Wood story. Because yeah, you're right. She took that fight because I don't think, like, you know, we say, oh, she was bored. She wants to stay active. She wants to stay active because she wants to get paid. I mean, a girl's got to eat. That's life, right? I mean, Look at guys like Stipe Miocic, who we mentioned earlier in the show, who's like, he's taken years off. Like, he just hasn't fought for 11, 12 months. Fortunately, I'm sure he'd like to be making more money, but he's in a position where, you know, he's a former champion. He's made enough cash he can afford to sit aside. A lot of fighters like Joanne Wood, she's more representative of the rest of the roster. They can't afford that. So it does suck. I'm sure fans are tired of hearing about JoJo's missed opportunities and all that and blah, blah, blah. But it really is like one of those what ifs, you know, that we're going to think about for a long time. So, I don't think she gets cut. I do think they keep her around because, like I said, I think she looked okay on the feet. The Tyler Santos fight was like a blowout. Tyler Santos is fighting for the title soon. Alexa Grasso, I thought she was doing well against, and I don't know. I think they still give her another fight.
I think this is as much as a blowout as the Santos fight. Getting knocked out and getting stubbed that easily, I think, is equally just as devastating.
But again, she was doing well on the feet. And again, the takedown.
I want to watch it again. There were two takedowns. There was one takedown when
the first one was Brian.
I remember Grosso had that. Someone had a clinch and kind of pulled her down. And I did not like the way JoJo looked on her back. The way she looked very content closing that guard.
Sure.
And to the point, Grosso was like, this is boring. Grosso actually stood up, like, let's just do this stand up. You know, let's keep this standing. And I don't remember how it got to the ground the second time.
You said watching it really is like, it was like this really awkward stumble, and Grosso got the better of it. She got the better of the scramble. So credit to her, but it was a very awkward stumble. It wasn't like Grosso was like dominating with her wrestling and got like a single leg and just, or body lock or something, and took her down.
But that's the sport, man. People tangle up and
roll. But you're asking me, I know, but that's not an indictment of Joanne Wood. I don't say Joanne Wood.
I kind of think it is. I think she's just a step behind on the ground now. And those scrambles, those transitions from striking to the ground, which is basically what MMA is, the transitions from martial art to martial art. Grosso was just way faster and way cleaner in those transitions.
Sure. But I'm saying this specific exchange was very random. And I give credit to Grosso for taking advantage of it, but it was really just watch it again. I think people seem to know what I'm talking about. It was a very awkward stumble for both fighters, and then Grosso, you know, she got the better of it. Again, it's not luck she got, but it wasn't anything that made me think like, oh, Joanne Wood can't defend against takedowns. It was just like, oh shit, she.
Well, it's not really the takedowns, but once she was on the ground, mm-hmm. JoJo just the first time she was on the ground, the way she just held guard like that, that closed guard, I just didn't like the way she looked on the ground. And obviously when she got submitted, she made Grosso, who I think is a very underrated grappler, she made Grosso look like, you know, Damian Maia type of grappler. You know, I give all the credit to the Grosso, but JoJo, we all like JoJo. She's a step behind. And I said in the Q&A, I hated saying it out loud, but I thought Grosso won by decision, but I thought it was going to be one-way traffic. And, you know, it was even more one-way traffic than I thought, unfortunately, for Wood.
Unfortunately, Joanne Wood will probably have a date with Casey O'Neill next, no matter what happens in Casey O'Neill's fight with Jessica Ai, because Wood, according to the UFC rankings, will drop to like number 9. Just guys, number 10. There's a beef between O'Neill and Wood, and the UFC is going to try to make that fight happen and try to milk that for all it's worth as Casey tries to climb the division. Brian Barberina, Matt Brown. What else can we say? Tremendous fight. Matt Brown transported to the hospital. Brian Barberina spoke with the media after the fight, so look for that on YouTube a little bit later. Neil Magny, good win against Max Griffin. Bet the judges got it right. Split decision. Mark Jacasey, veteran, workman-like performance against Borshev. Fight IQ to the nines. Well done. Good win for him. But we got to talk about Kaikar France versus Askar Askarov. Unanimous decision win. Tremendous fight. Really good fight. Listen, Barberina, Matt Brown is just a wild car wreck, and I loved it. But the mixing of the martial arts was on full display.
Yep.
KKF versus Askar Askarov. This is a KKF win, right? Like, this is no robbery. There are people on Twitter who thought this is an actual robbery. Because I said the judges got it right, and people are like, what world do you live in? I'm like, are you kidding me? What friggin' fight did you watch?
Liam Mahoney in the comments. Clear win for Askarov.
How is that a clear win for Askarov? Is this Askarov's cousin? Like that I would understand, and I apologize.
Liam, let us know.
Okay, I'm looking at MMA decisions and looks up. There were four journalists that had Askarov, but about 15 journalists had Cara France. So I guess it was, I thought it was pretty clear Cara France, and we look up, like, it looks like about 80% had Cara France. So I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not Robbie. Cara France won that fight. We're going to move on from that. I think.
No, it's pretty clear. Yeah. I'll play the advocate here, because I do the robbery reviews where I like to, you know, where I always look at kind of why something's being called a robbery. So two big ones. Very dominant first round for Askarov with the grappling. So I saw some people saying, was the first round a 10-8? And I'm like, no, he didn't do enough damage. Great grappling. He was in control. He threatened with submission. But I think people think a near submission is like getting a near finish in that sense. But one, I don't think he was that close to finishing it. And two, you actually don't. You're actually not supposed to reward like a 10-8 necessarily for a near submission. So I'm not sure if
you'll know that. But. The 3Ds. You get two of the 3Ds. Yeah.
Dominance
and duration. Actually, I would have no issue calling that first round a 10-8 for Askarov, actually. Because I thought
that is a good point. Yeah.
So I didn't score a 10-8, but I was actually expecting someone to kind of push the 10-8 narrative on it. And yeah.
I think they're putting a much heavier emphasis on damage now. Maybe I don't know if they should, but I mean, damage is supposed to be first, right? You're right. There is the 3Ds, but damage is supposed to be first. And he just didn't do it. He did do some nice elbows too. It was really a dominant first round for Askarov. It just, for me, didn't quite hit that damage thing. So I don't think you can call that a 10-9. I'm sure he thought it was Askarov and his team probably thought it was a 10-8. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you can't call it 10-8. I'm sure his team thought that. But obviously, first round for Askarov. Obviously, second round for Kakar France. Now, the third one was competitive. And again, you had takedowns from Askarov, but he did even less with the takedowns in the third than he did in the first round. Mm-hmm. Kai landed so many of the big shots. He just did more damage. So again, remember, guys, damage is first. As confusing as that can be sometimes when you see a guy who's such a strong wrestler like Askarov controlling so much of the fight. He just needs to do more damage in the ground and stuff like that. So, but really, really difficult fight. Should have gone two more rounds, as everyone's been saying, but not a robbery at all. Damage won the day. It was a Kara France that did the damage. So.
And he doubled him up in the third round in strikes. Mm-hmm. Significant strikes. And strikes total.
Yeah,
and doubled actually, him up.
What did Askarov do?
Oh, just about 23-12.
Why would Askarov get the third round?
He took the back again. He got like almost took the back. He got like a body triangle. It wasn't quite on the back, but he did have it again.
And he had
submission attempt really. Nothing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No damage on the ground from strikes. Yeah, I was.
No.
No.
I didn't understand the arguments. It made no sense. Like this is it was a clear third round for Kai.
Me too.
The clearest round of the fight was the second for Kai, and Askarov won the first. Yeah, but guess what? You know what's crazy? Kai Kara-France still outstruck Askarov in that round. It was 4-3, but he still outstruck him. So, I mean, that's it. It's like, this is not a robbery. This is not a discussion. Kai Kara-France won that fight. Askarov's a good fighter, man. That was a tough fight. But he got out of that first round, survived it, and you could tell Askarov's getting a little frustrated in there. So great performance from Kai Kara-France. Well done.
Awesome.
That was the best Kai Kara-France we've seen in the UFC. I know people are going to talk about the first round knockouts. That was the best version. He had to be the best version of himself to deal with Askarov. Askarov is, I said at the first round, I was really scared for Kai, but I also thought he would lose the first round, you know, when we were predicting the fight, but man, that guy is scary. So I don't know. We definitely haven't seen the last of Askarov and Kai Kara-France. I don't know. Could get the title shot.
And a shout out to my prediction, picking KKF for the decision victory. I remember Jedbit rolled his eyes like, what? That's a crazy one. I was like, and that's kind of how the fight, that's basically how I saw the fight. It'd be tough first round, but I felt Kai is he's actually just a really good athlete. And he was just a better athlete in there. He was able to stop the takedowns. Askarov slowed down a bit. The big weight cut is always going to hurt Askarov. No, it's just the first round, he's going to be freaking dangerous. But if you can get past that first round and you still have really high energy levels like Kara-France does, there's a strong chance of victory. But you have to get past that first round. It is going to be tough to get through that first round.
Two things. First of all, Jed Meshew being wrong about something, I don't believe you. That's a shocker. secondly, listen, we asked for Liam Mahoney's take on this. He said in the comments, Askarov landed cleaner, harder shots in the third. KKF was hitting air. I would watch that.
Literally not true.
Yeah, there's no way.
You should probably rewatch it. Maybe look at the stats, the stats as well. Yeah.
Even not the stats.
We literally doubled them up.
Stats, eye test, highlights, I don't know, whichever metric, KKF was landing some very, very hard punches in the third round. Askarov it's not like a dead duck on the feet, but he was getting struck.
No. But he lost the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And our own Jeff Jew scored at 29-28 for Mr. Kara-France. So
there you go. And he's never wrong.
Yes, and he picked Askarov.
And he did.
Kai Kara-France got the champion Davis of Figueiredo's attention, took to Twitter. I mean, I kind of would put this with the same sort of discrepancy thing like I did with the Khabib tweet about the Colby situation. Might have been Davis of Figueiredo, but there's a good chance that it was somebody else on behalf of Davis of Figueiredo. So congratulations, you dirty Kiwi Kai Kara-France. You just punched your ticket with the God of War. Brandon Moreno, you just took the back seat. You're 0-2 against Pantoja. If you could beat him, I'll give you the next title shot. So he's trying to put Moreno on the back burner. Unfortunately, Figgy doesn't really have that clout. So he's still going to fight Brandon Moreno, and Kaikar France will wait for the winner. Or if something were to happen to one of these gentlemen, we could slot him in there. We don't know when this fight's going to happen, by the way. I assume it's going to happen sometime in July.
He should have used that Pantoja line on Moreno. He should have said, Moreno, you're 0-2 against Alexander Pantoja. You should beat him for getting the fourth fight. Ooh. That line works for both those guys. So I was confused when I read that. I'm like, is he like diffused?
Yeah, well, when you said is this Moreno saying this or Figueroa?
Wait a minute. I misunderstood, Mike. Wait, he did say that to Moreno, right? The Pantoja thing is from Moreno, right?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay. I'm sorry. I totally missed. Yeah, everyone in the comments, feel free to roast me. I misunderstood. Yeah, sorry. He said he wants a Kaikar France next. I don't think that happens, right, guys? I think there's money to be made in the tetralogy, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is the opportunity. There's never been a better opportunity to do a tetralogy. What's the word? I got to remember this word.
You can say quadrilogy. I think quadrilogy is informally correct, right? You can say quadrilogy.
Okay. Yeah,
that's fine. Whichever you guys are comfortable with using. Because we've been saying tetralogy in like headlines, and I always see comments like, what's a tetralogy? Why do you guys mean quadrilogy, right?
It's
like,
okay.
I guess.
These aren't real words. We're making up words regardless.
All words. Really, all words are made up.
No.
What would you rather see? What would you rather see?
Casey? Oh, no. The quad. Okay. The quadrilogy. The fourth fight.
Apparently, this is according to the UFC, the UFC Columbus is the highest grossing U.S. fight night in history.
And they're not paying extra money for these guys. They still get the same 50K. When like they have 20 people showing up at the Apex cards, they have a sold out arena in Columbus, Ohio, and they, god dang. Hey, you don't make record profits if you give away money. That's all I got. Yeah.
This is true. Because you're right. It is, look, I made the case for Gutierrez and Blaze before, but like it is senseless that you don't give Alexa Grasso an extra, I mean, really more than 50,000, but if we're just going whatever their bonus designation, that she does not get an extra 50,000. For the first submission victory of her career, her first finish in almost eight years. And like I said, a pretty slick finish over a long time contender. I know she's coming off a submission loss, but still, I mean, Joanne Wood is a tough out. I don't care.
Yeah.
No, it is silly. And what was the other? There was another good finish. Even Kizriev was kind of that wasn't a bad. Oh, man. Yeah, it is silly. Give these people more money. Give them more money. You broke box office records, apparently.
Yeah, they're breaking records. Yeah, they're breaking freaking records. Jeez.
All the records. Yeah. All of them. All right, let's go to the peeps. Great. You ready for peeps? Good night of fights. Let's go to the peeps. Yeah, let's go to the peeps.
All right. Oops. Oop, wrong question. That's from Ness. Oh, what was that question?
We lost. We're
No, yeah.
AK.
Right. Oh, sorry. Why are you doing that? My poll. What I mean, the poll in the chat. What did you think of Curtis Blades' promo and call out tonight?
It's not that late. Come on.
What did you think of Curtis Blades? Oh, we're not after dark. It's not a pay-per-view. What did you think of Curtis Blades' promo and call out tonight? I said I gave the three options: hot fire, didn't do much for me. Actually hurt his position. Pretty firm. Didn't do much for me. 50%. So kind of what we thought going in. Not a lot. Not a lot to me. 38% hot fire. So that's kind of nice, but 50% didn't do much for me. 11% actually hurt his position. So if you want to lump those together, you can say 62% kind of like, didn't love what they heard from Curtis Blades tonight. But I thought it was all right. I think 38% is a nice number for hot fire.
Tough. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
That's what I'm saying. This is just such a fantastic night for Mr. Blades. The fact that we're still talking about him and like, is he past that? I don't know if he'll ever get over that boring fighter label, but he could be on his way. That's all.
Yeah.
What's crazy about this whole situation is that he might be the best heavyweight in the world. He might be the best guy. He might stylistically beat any of these guys. Like, this is a very good chance he beats all the names that are ahead of him. He beats all of them. Aspinall would be interesting. Like, if Curtis Blades fought Tai Tuivasa, he'd be a -700 favorite against Tai Tuivasa. Easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, just he's as good as everybody in this division. He got knocked out by Derek Lewis, which if you get hit by Derek Lewis, you get knocked out. It's just, unless you're Tai Tuivasa. But He's very good. He's a very good fighter. And in Bellator, he would be the freaking champion right now. It's just, I mean, he's just in a tough spot, man. Timing's always been his worst enemy, and it's not his fault at all.
If Francis Ngannou didn't exist, he may be the UFC champion right now, you know, just with the timing.
You're very
you know?
True. Very right. I mean, very right.
Before we go to the questions, actually, sorry, can we talk about a fight that should have been on, that could easily could have been on the main card, Miss Ferro and Maya?
Yes. That. Yes. Manon Fiorro, who I thought was going to win by knockout. Scott McCrate, by the way, is I know he's watching. He's going to freak out now that you brought it. Thank you, Casey.
He's sweating.
Has he been DMing you? Yeah. Anyway, huge Manon fan.
He's right here. He's like,
first of all, I was a little, listen, Anik is the god of announcing and pronunciations. I'm a little surprised that the commentary team was going with Manon Fiorro for her name Fiorro? Pronunciation. Fiorro. Now, one, I will say it is easier, definitely easier to say. And two, I do wonder, I don't know Anik to, he must have spoken to her team and just kind of run it by them. Like, is this okay? Like, you know, and they're probably just like, yeah, this is, they're probably tired of people mispronouncing her last name. So they are just like, just go with Fiorro. It's fine. This is acceptable. We just don't want people tripping over it, but it is Fiorro. People, yeah, if you can roll your R's a little bit too, it'd be nice. But yeah, we'll just go with Manon for simplicity's sake. She looks really good. I saw some people saying like, you know, that because she didn't get a finish, I guess they were a little disappointed. But like, Maya is a former title challenger, a super tough top eight in her division. I think this told us a lot about Manon, and she has a lot to work on for sure. Has a lot to work on. She's not anywhere near the top. You know, again, I would say maybe I wouldn't like her chances against Chukagian. I wouldn't like her chances against Jessica Andrade, and obviously I wouldn't like her chances against Valentina. But that's it. That's like the other than that, I think she's on her way. I do want to see her again tested a couple more times.
I kind of disagree.
I
wasn't. I'm not in the Scott McCrae, you know, leading the bandwagon for Fiorro. Right. Fiorro, but she impressed the heck out of me. I thought Maya was going to win tonight. I thought it was going to be too much too soon for her. But she beat Maya with the same dominance that Shevchenko beat Maya with. You know, and I'm doing a little MMA math, but as far as like comparing wins, but that was incredibly impressive to me. Yeah, it wasn't maybe the most exciting knockout finish, but I think knockout finishes are kind of a bit overrated. As far as the quality of Manon as a fighter, I thought this showed me a lot, and I was just highly impressed with the performance, and that's why I said such a big night for new flyweight contenders, both male and female. So that's just like, and I wasn't sold on her before. I'm sold. Now, is she going to beat Valentina? No one's saying that. Is Grosso going to beat Valentina? No one's saying that. But I think we have legit title contenders, though, coming up with Cara France and the two women.
And that's the fight you book, right? Not to spoil onto the next one, but that's the fight, right? Fiorro versus Grosso. Like, you think you have to do it.
If you can guarantee the winner fights for the title, if they just do that fight and without any sort of guarantee that the winner fights for the title, otherwise, no. Because,
We have to wait 2 months before we can even discuss this. Because if Miesha Tate beats Lauren Murphy, then Miesha Tate's fighting for the title.
Oh, just for?
Like the first chance they give her. Yeah, first chance they give her. But if Lauren Murphy wins, that we do Manon Fiorro versus Alexa Grasso, number one contender fight. Yeah. And go from there.
I almost kind of hope that happens because I want to put off Valentina having to go up against the likes of like Manon and Erin Blanchfield and Casey O'Neill. I wish we could hold that up. Like, I don't want any of those women fighting for the title before the end of this year. I know it's very possible one of them does. I understand that. Even Alexa Grasso, I feel like, she's got a lot of experience, though. She's got a lot of high-level experience. Grasso would probably be, of all those those names I just mentioned, the one I'm like, if she fought for the title by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised. She's 20. I kind of still view her as that young 20-year-old in Invicta, right?
Yeah. I was thinking when I was watching her, I was talking, it's like, oh my God, I've known her. I was at her first fight in Invicta. Yeah. We hung out and talked. She knew no English. I was talking to her and Papa Grasso, her dad and everything. And it's just been a pleasure watching her kind of mature into this just awesome fighter she is now.
Yeah, her getting a title fight soon would make a lot of sense. Those other names I mentioned, again, Blanchfield, that kind of Blanchfield, O'Neill, Fiorro cluster. But the thing is, now that, again, Fiorro just beat Maya, Casey just got that win over Roxanne Ferrer, so that was a nice win. She might get Jessica Ai now. They're knocking off the vets. They're knocking off the former title challengers. At some point, there's really no choice but to throw them in there with Shevchenko, when really I feel like all of them are like a year away, at least a year away from being even somewhat of a challenge. But Valentina likes to fight. She likes to stay busy. She likes to add those jewels to that belt. So there you go.
Valentina is now getting to that little second crop of new lady flyweights, and it's awesome. I'm super excited about the ladies flyweight division. Don't forget Miranda Maverick too. She's in there too.
Miranda Maverick, amazing.
There's a lot of super good talent who are chasing the queen right now. I think flyweight has been an overlooked division in MMA right now, and I think it's going to get very exciting. Hopefully, the UFC gives it the proper push. That's all I hope.
But don't worry. Don't worry, AK. They will still have to wait a year.
Yeah.
Because Valentina, if she beats Tyler Santos, she will be moving up to 135 to fight for a second title before the year is over. So don't you worry.
Of course.
Don't you worry. All right. By the way, props to Brandon Moreno, because this guy just gets it. No, he said, Davis is outside of the contract. Hey, Kai, let's fight for an interim title.
Yeah.
Well done, Assassin baby. All right, let's go to the peeps.
To the peeps. All right, what we got here?
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
We got this question. We kind of talked about it, but just real quick. That's tiny.
What does Curtis Blaydes gain with that win? Heavyweight division is still a mess. Do we still think the UFC will try to do John versus Stipe for an interim title? I'll give my quick answers. Very little, which is unfortunate because he deserves better. Yes, heavyweight division is still a mess. Do we still think the UFC will try to do John versus Stipe? Yes, I think they will try. That's the operative word here, is try. Will they be successful? You're asking a lot, but they will certainly try. So that's my thoughts.
The exact wording of the question, of course they're gonna do everything in their power to make that happen. They gotta put a low jack on John Jones or something, or they gotta just hire private investigators to keep an eye on this guy. A shock collar. I don't know what it's going to take, but we need to keep this guy from misbehaving and just from doing dumb stuff. Because of course that's the fight they want. It's such a sellable fight, even with against Stipe not having fought for so long, John Jones not having fought for so long, just being in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. They want that more than almost Ngannou coming back, other than of course to make an Ngannou Jones fight. But they would love a Stipe Miocic John Jones fight. The greatest heavyweight champion ever, the greatest light heavyweight champion ever. It's just so easy for them to throw on a poster. So yeah, they're gonna try their damnedest, I'll tell you that much.
UFC can make this fight tomorrow. They just gotta pay for it. So that's all. If the UFC decides to cut back on their profit margins or whatever, this fight can happen tomorrow. It's just a money thing. That's all.
I think it'll happen. I think it'll get done. I mean, there's not a lot of raw. There's not going to be a ton of options for July. I mean, Adesanya will fight on one of those cards, and you have to think with Strickland Pajeda being booked for July 30th, that Adesanya Cannonier will probably headline that card. That would make a lot of sense. So, I mean, now you're talking International Fight Week. I don't know if Kamaru will be ready for Leon for that card. I mean, I don't know which, maybe Connor's return. I don't even know if July is even possible at this point. I mean, you have to think International Fight Week, maybe trying to make that fight the main event. I don't know what the hell they're going to do, but I think it'll get done. Unless somebody gets injured or something happens behind the scenes that John makes another mistake or something, which we hope doesn't happen. But other than that, I think they will get this done.
As long as John isn't behind bars, I don't think there's enough mistakes he can make. As long as he's a free man and he gets paid right, I don't think the UFC has any issues with getting him in that case.
I think they'll get it done. I think they'll get it done.
Like a Mr. King of positivity. All right.
That's it. Can we not do this question with the Buffalo Bills logo? Just joking. KKF and Askarov deserve fight of the night. What did you think about the decision? I felt Askarov may have done enough early in the third to tilt the decision his way. Askarov seemed sluggish this fight, though. I mean, we talked about this already. From a mixing of the martial arts standpoint, this was the best fight of the card. It's like no question about it. Matt Brown and Brian Barberina was just super fun, and it just had everything you needed, right? Like, you had two bloody veterans just literally giving their souls to everybody. Like, Matt, both those guys are done. They had nothing left to offer. They left it all in that cage. Crowd went bananas. I mean, it was just everything. There's no way that wasn't going to be the fight of the night. Decision was the right decision.
Yeah.
Kai Kara-France won. And Askarov, I'm not going to say he seemed sluggish. I just think Kai beat him. Like, Kai just beat him.
Yeah, Askarov, he's always going to start really hot, but he has a big weight cut, and I wouldn't say sluggish either. He's just gonna slow down, and Kai is just a very, very, you know, prime athlete, and he can go 110% every round. So yeah,
You slow down when he didn't do a lot of wrestling. That's going to slow you down
a lot too. Remember, he got punched a lot. That slows you down.
Michael Bisping always says that, right? He's like, man, nothing drains your cardio like getting hit, right? Like, because there's a lot of people who like Bisping outworked, and people are like, man, that guy looks tired, tired against Bisping. I'm like, yeah, because Bisping punched him in the head like 50 times.
Yeah, but it did deserve fight of the night. It deserves something.
Askarov will be back. This guy is
he's super good, man. Askarov is a really good fighter.
Yep.
It's a his really title good
window
fighter.
His title window is still very open. Let's put it that way. It was just Kai Kara's night. Kai Kara-France's night.
What did you think of Amanda Fierro's call to Kaitlyn Chookagian? For those who don't know, Kaitlyn Chookagian fight Amanda Ribas May 14th at 125. What did you think of the call at AK?
I mean, it's the right name. She clearly believes she's only one away. Chookagian is the gatekeeper at 125, and so if you beat Chookagian, you get a title shot. This is pretty much a lock, right? And also, that'd be a hell of a I think that's a hell of a tough thing to do, right? So, I said some questions were answered in her win over Maya, some were raised. This would answer even more questions if she could, especially if she could win. I mean, if she knocked out Chookagian, great, but kind of like Casey said before, like, man, you'd learn a lot more from her going three rounds to Chookagian than you would if she like kind of caught her with some bomb in the first round. Though I'm sure she'd love that, and all her fans would love that as well. So I don't mind it. Now, this fight isn't until Joseph Boza, May 14th. So we're a bit of ways from there. If you're Manon Fierro, you're definitely staying in shape. If something should happen to Chookagian or Ribas, you jump right in there. That's either one of those is a great fight for her to take, and it wouldn't shock me at all if again, something, fingers crossed, one of those fighters wasn't able to make it to the May 14th card, and Manel stepped in.
Is Ribas going up in 20? Going up to 25? Is she leaving strawweight?
Just for this fight.
Oh, just for that fight? Okay.
She was supposed to fight Michelle Waterson. She was booked against her a couple times.
Is Chookagian coming in at late notice? Well, not late notice, I guess. This is a fight. Yeah. Okay. I got you.
There's just two women who needed fights, and they're just like, okay, we'll just fight. We'll just fight.
And Kagan's probably never getting another title shot, so she's just, you know.
Maybe an interim title fight sometime. Who knows?
Who knows?
I have a feeling we're going to get like 14 interim title fights in the next year.
Oh, Mike, don't say that.
Sorry.
I hope Bellator does interim title fights on both sides of the brackets.
Oh my god.
Sorry, I'm bringing up Bellator's title fights.
Don't even get me started. Poor Josh Hill. I feel so bad for Josh Hill.
All right. Another one for Mr. Boza.
So Chris Dawkins is good on a light heavyweight. I think this fight told us he is screwed against the best heavyweights. I think we knew that anyways, though. Again, here's the thing with Chris Dawkins. All of this stuff, this is cherry on top of the sundae. No one expected this to happen. Did you think we'd see Chris Dawkins in a main event ever, AK? Did you think
can
we'd
I,
see
Can it? I just say, though, I think getting badly concussed in back-to-back fights is not a cherry. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but I do think calling it a cherry is a bit, I don't know, it doesn't quite reflect what happened to Chris Dawkins in the last two fights. And again, as far as we know, he's probably not getting paid that much more for fighting in the main event, if at all. So I don't know how much he really did gain from, you know, getting thrown into these top 10 matchups. I know what you mean. If he had won, fantastic, right? Like I said, no one thought he would make it this far. But I don't know about Cherry. I think that there's changes that have to be made in his career now. And there's no way he regrets taking either of these fights. But I don't think he's going to look back on these experiences fondly.
Yeah, I just don't know if he could do, I don't like the light heavyweight idea. Unless like Chris Dawkins wakes up in the morning and there's a picture of a UFC title hanging on his wall and he just stares at it and it's like, I need this in my life. My career is unfulfilled if I don't win a title. Then you just take a year off and you just figure out a way to get to 205 if you really want to be a champion. If you want to just fight and make money and not kill yourself to like get down to a weight and just sort of enjoy the in-between time, still work hard, but not have to cut 50 pounds. You stay at heavyweight. There's still fun fights for him there and fights he can win.
And he's only lost to top five heavyweights. One of his sixth best heavyweight in the world. That's a wonderful accomplishment. If you're the sixth best at whatever you do, for your occupation, you've done a great. You're doing great. So I just, he's not losing to rando, you know, with those guys. You know, he's losing the best, and Chris Dawkins isn't ready for that. He's not an elite heavyweight. The UFC was trying to push it. Gave him two chances at main events. You know, went bad for him. You know, there you go. Take a break and come back and fight Andre Arlovsky. See where you're at.
I like that matchup. But I'm also all in on light heavyweight Chris Dawkins. Chris, if you let me put this way, you're even thinking about this change, I encourage it.
All right. we care about your well-being, Chris. was Brown Barberina decision fair in your opinion? It wasn't a robbery, but Brown looked good for the better part of the third round. Maybe not the end of it, but could have done enough to steal it. So was this a robbery? I mean, is this even...
His takedowns.
I mean, robbery is such a big word, but
his takedowns.
How did you score it, AK?
I definitely had a 29-28 Barberina. The flurry at the end obviously was huge. I think that was the biggest moment of the third round. Other than that, the striking was, I don't know if it was that even. I do think Barberina actually was getting the better of the striking in the third. I think people are looking at the takedowns, and Brown did get a few punches off while Barberina was getting up. So it's not like he didn't do any damage after getting takedowns, but not enough, I think, to overcome what Barberina did in the other parts of the round, and especially at the end when he really, really, I don't want to say came close to finishing, but he was putting it on him. So I thought the judges did a really, really great job, because I did see comments saying like, oh, Brown had the takedowns, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but he just didn't do enough.
Takedowns don't mean anything unless you get some sort of dominant position or submission or do damage. They mean zero. It's just a change of position. It's simply just a change of position. They mean nothing. Yeah.
The punches he landed while Barberina was getting up from the takedowns were more important than the takedowns themselves. So if there had been more of that, maybe it's a Brown round. But again, really close fight. I don't think it's like if Brown had won, I don't think it would have been the worst decision ever. But I'm pretty strong. I feel pretty confident that Barberina won that one. Again, we're telling the same story with the Kai Kara France thing, though Askarov's grappling was much more dominant than Matt Brown's was, I think. But same idea. Who did more damage? I think this was, again, Barberina took that third round. Just why, again, it's not that the last 30 seconds override everything else. It's that plus maybe, again, how ineffective the takedowns were and plus other work Barberina did in that round. So, not a robbery at all. Hey, crowd that booed him.
Ooh, yeah. Boo you, crowd. Yourself. Boo that
Get
crowd.
Stuffed. Get stuffed. Stuff you, people. All right. I understand it's a home crowd. Fans love Matt Brown. He's from Ohio, so they really love Matt Brown there. But man, don't boo Brian Barberina after something like that. That was a really great fight. I mean, that's exactly what people pay their money for. So you're supporting your boy. I understand. But you don't got to crap on somebody else like that. Yeah. And it really went too. It wasn't even like they just booed him right after. And then like, oh, he started talking. They stopped. They were like booing him throughout his post-fight interview. And I'm like, Ohio, get it together, man. Come on. Don't be like that.
Sore loser. That was a great fight. Great, great fight. Barberina won that fight, though.
Yeah. If that, I mean, listen, if this fight took place in Lincoln, Nebraska, we'd all be talking about what a fight it was and Brian Barberina won it.
Yeah.
We're just, it's location and the crowd and it does things to us. It happens from time to time. But Barberina won that fight. The third round, clear. Let's just go look at the numbers. Clear Barberina win. 53-35 significant strikes for Brian Barberina. Matt Brown was badly hurt in that third round. Very close to stopping. There's another 30 seconds. Brian Barberina would have knocked Matt Brown out. So, yeah, win from Brian Barberina. Good, great fight, though. Great fight. Last fight on Barberina's contract, too, he revealed to the media after. So we'll see what happens.
Oh,
so that could have been his last fight.
Oh, did he said, said he mentioned the R word, right?
He said in the post fight interview or the scrum afterwards, last fight in his deal. The UFC wants me back. I'll come back. If they decide, nah, don't want you back, then I'll retire. I'll retire and work at the farm. It's kind of guy.
I believe him too. Yeah, exactly. I believe him. 100%. It's such a Brian Barberina thing to say. Casey, you see the question from John Guy? Because I was actually just about to mention this. Because I think Mike might have mentioned it when he was running, like kind of in passing as we were running down the main card results. Yeah, this totally, like, we talk about a card flying under the radar. How about a momentous, like, milestone flying under the radar? I'm sorry, people who are listening to this. John Guy asking thought on Magny. He didn't beat GSP's record. He tied the record for most UFC welterweight victories at 19.
He's going to beat it at some point. He'll beat the record.
Probably. Yeah. I'd be very unlikely. Because he's in that range of guys where he's not necessarily always fighting, you know, top seven or eight people. He fights. Sometimes he goes up, fights top seven or eight. And sometimes he fights in that mid-range where he is just the class of that mid-range, I feel. He's been in the top 15, around the top 10 for the last, like, 3 years. Like, he's just a great, really consistent fighter. His performance against Max Griffin was classic Magny. I mean, Max Griffin looked awesome in the first round. And then, like, Magny just finds a way. One, he doesn't stop. I mean, he fights as hard as he does in the third, as he does in the first. And just finds a way to win. So it was great. But this is what you have to do to reach 19 wins. You either have to have this dominant run like GSP, or you hang around. And it's not like he's a 500 fighter. I think he's 19-7 in the UFC, I want to say, after tonight. 19-7, 19-8. So he's well above 500. He's clearly an elite welterweight. I get it. For some reason, Neil Magny has never, you know, made scintillating headline material. I get that. But boy, that's if you want to call it a sign of longevity or just being stubborn or just sticking around long enough. There it is. But officially tied with GSP. And I think it'll be a bigger deal if he breaks it. I will say, I think if he hits 20, it's a nice round number, surpasses GSP. I think the UFC and everyone else will be a lot more aware of when this happens.
All right. Congrats, Neil. Well done.
Congrats. Well done. Amazing.
Real quick, because the Idaho Statesman really wants us to talk about this. So real quick, I got to give the man.
What did you think of 1X this morning? Who watched 1X this morning?
I didn't watch it live.
I didn't watch it live.
I watched the DJ Rod Tang fight. That's all I watched. And it was fun.
I'll say it was from what I saw, it was a spectacular mixing of the martial arts. There was kickboxing, there was grappling. Jed Meshew's number one middleweight ranked fighter, Rainier DeRidder, had a grappling match. And I don't know if he won or went to a draw or something, but as a draw, which for him is like a win. I mean, considering, he's a great grappler, but it was like a straight jiu-jitsu competition. Very cool of DJ. I don't know if this affects our rankings for him, guys, because it was great to see him in action. Obviously, it wasn't an actual MMA fight. He fought Rod Tang. And he won. He choked him out. He did. You know, he's one of the most well-rounded fighters in MMA history. So he managed the Muay Thai round and then took over in the MMA round, and choked him out. So that's fantastic. Sexyama knocking out Shinya Aoki. That's great. That's great. Listen,
that was a mean knockout too. Knees on the ground and everything. Ooh, that was mean. I saw the clip. I didn't see the whole fight, but that looked pretty mean.
I said this in the Slack. 40 plus fighters. That's where it's at. All right. Sarah McMahon, Sexyama.
Oh, Jeremy Mann, yeah. 40-year-old Jeremy Mann.
Olynyk would have had it tonight. Matt Brown, I mean, he didn't win, but what a performance. And of course, there we go. Our own E. Casey Lydon.
Undefeated.
The epitome. So listen, I think Olynyk would have gotten it tonight too. I think Olynyk finally would have gotten win number 60 if, unfortunately, Leila Tepe, some sort of non-COVID related illness. Yeah. So hey, 40 plus, that's when to start your MMA career, man. I mean,
Did Sarah McMahon, is she the oldest woman to have a UFC victory?
I think Mary Young Renault. I believe
Mary Renault. I think Mary Renault lost those fights though.
I think she had one. I think she did get a win in there somewhere.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Because she's 44 now. Ooh, she beat Sarah McMahon. I gotta do some math. You're gonna make me do some math now, Casey. I don't know. She was probably around the same age as Sarah McMahon is now when she beat Sarah.
What's Michael Carroll saying? You'd think he'd have that stat.
Oh, MJC like,
ready to go.
All right.
Oh,
wow. I'll look it up.
Are we done?
We've got an hour 10 on this wonderful fight night.
Yeah, we're done.
Wait, hold on. Oh, here we go. Let's do this for the hometown guys.
OH.
No, the booing.
Oh, yeah. That's how you spell Ohio, okay. By the way.
The last poll result, guys. The last poll result. What flyweight boosted their stock the most tonight? Kai Car France, big lead, 69%. I mean, that's not a surprise. But Grasso right behind, not right behind, but a respectable 24%. And then Manuel Fiorot, 4%. Mateus Nicolau, 2%. I know a lot of people weren't thrilled with that first round with Nicolau and Dvorak. Nicolau, I think, is a little bit unforcing the Arnold Allen range right now, where like he needs a finish or something. Because we know he's
good.
He was
so low in the card, too.
He was so low in the card. It turned out actually a decent fight, actually, in rounds 2 and 3, but not super memorable. But took out a guy in a 16-fight win streak. Like, I think Nicolau was – I mean, people know I'm a huge fan of his, so I've been on that train for a while. I think he fights for a title someday, but this isn't the kind of performance that I think is going to have people, knocking down the doors trying to get one for him.
Yeah. That, unfortunately, was the letdown of the card. Yeah. Sad. I was looking so much forward to that fight. That first round was so bad. So no OHIO champ for AK, but no UFC next week. But the week after that, there in Jacksonville, Florida. I will be in Jacksonville, Florida. Ooh. Jose Youngs will be in Jacksonville, Florida. And we know what that means all week long, AK. What are we going to say all week long?
We're going to be a shout out to Duval!
We're out of here. For the undefeated Casey Lydon, the Prince of Positivity, AK Lee, AK and I back tomorrow for On to the Next One matchmaking. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.